Thanks for listening to the Best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for The Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
You're listening to The Best of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker.
And let's get to the World Series. Obviously, that's the biggest story going on right now in sports. And Rob, I watched that game last night.
Yes.
I know you did too. And what I saw, was it the seventh inning? Pedro Baez
had throwing gas.
It's straight heat.
Yes.
Mows down two Red Sox batters with his high fastballs that they went chasing. And then Dave Roberts.
Overmanaging. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say that?
Is it even on Dave Roberts? He was looking at his little analytics book. I don't know if he got, you know, a call from on high, whatever, whether it was the front office, whether it was Dave Roberts, whether it was both of them, he made an analytical move and removed Baez from the game, put in Alex Wood because he wanted the lefty-righty matchup, and the rest is history. The Red Sox hit a home run.
Nunez hit a three-run home run to put the game It was, what, 5-4, right?
Right.
And
they had just scored a run to move within
one. To move close.
One.
That the game is in the – all you need is a bloop and a blast. You would win that game. You could easily win that game. And that just – you know what? I get the analytics. I do. I don't want to sound like I'm a dinosaur and I don't understand some of the matchups, Chris.
Right.
I get it. But sometimes you got to have a gut, a feel. Somebody's pitching well. Even though it's lefty-righty and all that other stuff, the guy was throwing gas. He was pitching well.
Yep.
Sometimes you have to have an eye test and say, I know I should go with the left-handed pitcher here, but you know what? He's throwing so well, I'm going to stick with him. I don't want anybody else on the mound but Baez because he's pitching well enough to be able to make it happen and get that final out, and it didn't happen.
That's exactly right. And none other than Alex Rodriguez agrees with you and me.
I'm flabbergasted by that move. And look, we always talk about a point guard. In order to be good, you have to see the floor. A manager has to do the same thing. What metric are they previewed that you take out Baez, who's dominating, faces two hitters, strikes them both out? It doesn't make any sense, do you? Scripted baseball does not work in October. It could work during the season. Scripted baseball does not work in October.
This is why A-Rod is on ESPN and Fox Sports 1 and doing nobody unprecedented, okay? People could hate on him all he wants.
Right.
Unprecedented, Chris. We both worked for both networks, right?
He's
nobody.
Terrific.
He's terrific, and he's not afraid to say the move made no sense.
Right.
He could be friendly with Dave Roberts or whatever you want to do, and they don't want to hurt Dave Roberts' feelings or whatever. That is a real analyst right there who called it the way he sees it.
No question.
He was right on the money. I don't know if anybody was watching to say A-Rod is as real as it comes there. It didn't make sense.
There is no way 10 years ago, maybe even 6 years ago, that a pitcher who is looking that good.
Dominating.
You take him out? Why? Because some analytics told you, and I'm getting tired of it, Rob, and I'm like you. I understand
some of it.
The place of analytics. You're never going to just completely say you don't need numbers.
Nah, I'm
you
not.
You discount
with that.
The science and so on and so forth. But analytics is a piece of the puzzle. It is not the whole puzzle. And it's not just baseball. It's the NBA. Sam Hinkie tried to run the Philadelphia 76ers based entirely on analytics. And where did it get them? They were horrible. Now I know you can say, oh, well, they got
trust
Ben
the
Simmons
process.
And they got
right.
Joel Embiid. But
that's because they
all,
were terrible.
Let's see. Exactly.
Trust
let's
process.
See how well that works out. Those are two guys that look like they'll be stars. But remember, they also drafted Nerlens Noel. Where's he? And Jahlil Okafor,
yep.
too. They ended up so many times in the lottery that they finally got lucky and got two guys who look like they could play, two guys who've been hurt too. So I don't want analytics. You should have an analytics department, but your baseball operations or your basketball operations should not be run entirely based on analytics. I'm getting sick of it. 877-99 on Fox, 877-996-6369. Give us a call. Do you like this analytics stuff? Do you think it's gone too far? Rob, I'm sorry. I don't know if this is going to offend anybody, but it's revenge of the nerds.
No, it is.
It's a bunch of nerdy dudes.
The pocket,
who,
pocket,
a lot of them don't know
protectors.
Anything about sports right. As far as playing it at any level. You don't have to be a pro. We didn't play pro. We didn't play big-time college.
But we played baseball.
But
we know baseball.
Some feel. There are analytics guys, I believe, that can't watch a game and tell you what's happening.
No.
From knowledge. They can just tell you about the numbers, and it is revenge of the nerds, the guys that never got picked to play on the playground, and they were upset, and they were maybe, unfortunately, they were bullied. I don't justify that. They were, you know, whatever. They weren't the popular kids, the cool kids, the in crowd, like the jocks. But now they've taken over sports, and they like it, and it's gone too far.
No doubt about it. And as for all the Billy Bean, you know, they give him so much props on all that. Can you tell me the championship that the Oakland A's won where Billy Bean's running that analytics stuff? None.
Thank you.
Zero. And so everybody, oh, well, you guys are dinosaurs. You're living in the past. You know, you got to have the right matchups. RBIs don't matter. Wins don't matter. They got all these different things that'll tell you. Oh, no, walks and runs scored matter.
Strikeouts don't matter.
Strikeouts don't matter. They got all this other stuff, and it's been killing. It's been killing baseball. It's killing the game because I don't recognize the game anymore.
Rob G, our producer, just said Dave Roberts, obviously the manager for the Dodgers, just used the phrase on the MLB Network: "Trust the process."
Oh, stop, process. Stop!
He's a hinky disciple, I guess.
But here's all these guys, and then it's the other one. If you don't want to play ball their way, they won't. Look at all the older managers who they got rid of. Remember we went through it.
Yeah,
they all. John Farrell won a championship with the Red Sox. They
Dusty
got rid of him.
Dusty Baker.
Dusty Baker's out of a job. Joe Girardi's out of a job. We just saw Mike Socha's out of a job. And Buck Showalter's out of a job. And who was the Mets manager?
Just this year?
No, 2 years ago. Just got fired. I just forgot his name. But they another older guy
right.
who they got rid of. And this is where we are now. They don't want those guys anymore. They want these young guys. They want to be able to hand you their
And they're not. That's why they're not paying these managers.
They don't want to pay them. They don't believe the manager has anything to do with it. It's so bad.
Here, analytics led to what we saw last night, or an overemphasis on the analytics. Because, again, I'm not saying it doesn't have its place. But it led to what we saw last night with Nunez taking Alex Wood deep and ending game one for the chances for the Dodgers. It led to the Houston Rockets missing 27 straight three-pointers in the playoffs, championship, Conference Finals against the Golden State Warriors.
How can you shoot 27 straight three? I'm not straight, but miss 27 straight.
Because they believe you should only shoot a three-pointer or something in the paint. And let me say this for all the analytics heads out there who are getting upset with Rob Parker and me. In terms of the NBA, they love the Golden State Warriors. They say the Golden State Warriors are the team that, you know, revolutionized basketball, and that's true with the three-point shooting and all that. The Golden State Warriors don't shoot too many three-pointers. Last year, they were around 25th in the league in three-pointers attempted. They were first in three-point percentage.
But they weren't
but
in the amount,
in
right.
The, in the amount.
That's a great point.
Kevin Durant is a mid-range killer. Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and Durant, they all get backdoor layups. They get tons of backdoor layups off cuts. They don't overextend themselves just to shoot the three-pointer. People should learn from that. They're balanced. And guess who else is balanced? The Boston Red Sox.
Right.
Right now, probably the best team in baseball. They use analytics.
But they don't go.
But they don't. Yeah, they don't go overboard.
We've seen them make moves that go against analytics that worked out for them. You know what
yes.
I mean?
Well, against the Yankees Holt. In that series, Brock Holt, they put him in. He gets hits for the cycle.
He put a cycle in the playoffs. And Terry Collins is the manager I was thinking of the Mets. He is another one. Older guy. All these older guys, they're done. They don't want those guys anymore. If you're not willing to take their information from upstairs, and when the Astros won the World Series last year, Chris, A.J. Hinch, their manager, didn't make out the lineup at all. The lineup was handed to him from upstairs. Can you imagine one of these old guys doing that? Never would happen.
Unbelievable.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I want to just say that dude. I know who y'all talking about when I say that dude. But we're going to give his government Marcellus Wiley.
His government name?
Let me give the rundown. Y'all know him.
All right.
Before, I know he likes hearing this too, and I ain't mad at him either. All right. Former All-Pro defensive end, obviously in the NFL, and now host of Speak for Yourself on FS1, and an author with a new book that just came out yesterday. Make sure you pick it up. It's in stores now. The book is called Never Shut Up. Let's welcome in our man, Marcellus Wiley. Man, it's great to have you in studio.
Oh, man, I love you guys. You know that. Mm-hmm. And it's great to hear it just because I remember the days when there was nothing to say after the name. You remember those days?
Oh, yeah. Right.
And now we got Marcellus.
Marcellus.
Echo.
Chris, you left out one thing.
Okay.
Come on, he's an Ivy Leaguer. Graduated from Columbia. Don't.
Not bad.
He saved that for you. That's all he did. He saved that for you. You're not lying.
You know, hey.
Ivy Leaguer. That ain't
Ivy
no joke.
Ivy Leaguer is no
right.
joke. Barack Obama also graduated from
He did. I wish he rep us a little more than that.
No, I know.
All that Occidental and Harvard talk.
Right. Come on, man. He went to Columbia.
He graduated from Columbia undergrad. Respect. But
he
that just
does,
makes
but those
bigger.
Other two schools are the ones you hear more
no,
about.
No, I know. You don't hear Columbia as much.
Nah, he didn't have a great experience there, so I get it. But you know what? That just makes it bigger for us, baby.
No doubt.
Let me ask you this quickly about Columbia, because one of my daughters is at Penn, one's at Michigan, and they look at Columbia, right?
Nice.
And I'm just, both y'all went there. You were grad, though.
Right, grad school for me.
The reputation that they got from people they knew that went there was that, like, this is where fun goes to die.
What?
They said Columbia, they said University of Chicago, which we visited too.
Okay.
And they said that about Columbia.
Well, Ivy League schools? What is that?
No, because Penn, my daughter's at Penn, and they, you know, all the schools don't have that rep.
What do you mean? Rep? I lived it.
All right, so it's true.
I tell you, it's economic based, and it's because Columbia is a smaller campus. It's a quad, only 10 blocks maybe at that. Small
uptown.
Uptown, small student population. So what happens is you get so comfortable within those borders, and as soon as you step out, two things hit you. One, how eclectic it is. People from all over the world, melting pot, you love it. And then the cost. You're like, wait a minute.
I'm in college. I don't have any money, but it's New York.
Dude, I used to go to the Citibank on a corner, and thank God, because it was next to a Columbia campus, you could withdraw $10. Because if they would have said 20 minimum, I would have never got my money out. I only had like $18.35 every year. You know what I mean? So Columbia, because of location, I think sometimes scares people away. Therefore, your fun stays on campus.
Okay.
Then you start to say, man, this ain't that cool.
You know what else is cool is the restaurant they used to eat at on Seinfeld is on the corner of Broadway in like 113.
Tom's Diner.
It's really called Tom's.
Okay. Yeah.
But they call it Monk's on the show, but that's the exact diner.
So you were there then when it was when Seinfeld was huge, probably, right?
Oh, yeah, big time, man. Yeah. It was great. I mean, not only Seinfeld was huge, the East Coast, West Coast beef was huge.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And I'm from Compton, L.A., and I'm in New York, and Snoop and them is crushing the buildings, and I'm like, I'm not from L.A. right now, but I am. And then I go to L.A., and they're like, yo, you in New York with Biggie and all them guys? And Lauryn Hill went to our school, and we used to
She went to Columbia?
Oh, man.
I didn't know that.
It was an amazing dollar show. So I saw Dave Chappelle's first comedy show ever for a dollar. Run DMC came through, Onyx, Lords of the Underground. Huge acts would come through Columbia because it's New York City.
Yeah. Right.
For $1, man, I saw so many great acts at that time.
Tell us about the book. What made you write it? And really, I mean, obviously you want people to read it, but just give us a little taste of what we'd get if we bought the book and read it.
Yeah, I think 5 years ago, a publisher came to me and said, hey, your story is amazing. We want to tell it to the masses. But I thought that they were coming in a way that it was going to be a third and goal, Super Bowl glory, typical football book. Didn't want to write that, man. I don't want to talk the typical experience. But then that kind of parlayed into what it actually is, which is a memoir to inspire. I was born in a place where the stats and the circumstances right. told you you wouldn't make it. And I was a guy who, at a young age, put the cape on, said I'm responsible for not only myself, but my family, and it's time to get up out the hood. And so I used my only two tools I had in my belt, which was my athletic success and my academic eagerness. And I just said I'm always going to be this balancing act to get out the hood. Then I got to Columbia. So all the naysayers in the hood was like, wow, this dude went to an Ivy League school. We didn't even think he was going to make it out the hood. And then I'm at Columbia, and they shifted. All of a sudden, they said, you're not going to make it to the NFL. You went to the worst school ever for football.
Because at one point, Columbia lost, what, 20?
44.
44 games in a row.
Did you think, like, when you went to Columbia, were you thinking, I'm going to get a great education and be, you know, whatever you aspire to be?
A doctor or something else?
Yeah. Or were you really thinking, I'm going to the NFL through Columbia?
Yeah, man, great question, because I had to be responsible with my decision. I wasn't the typical 17-year-old saying, I'm going to the football factory. I was recruited to football factories.
You were, okay.
Yeah, but I couldn't go there because too many of those guys came back to the hood. Too many of those guys didn't make it in the real world. They had great careers, and then you look up, they're either broke or going through the same adversity that they did before they even made it to the league. So I had to make a responsible choice, and that was to give me the best safety net possible based on my decision. So I had to play the long game. I couldn't play the 4 years and Rose Bowl game. I had to play when I'm done playing football, if it's in 4 years or if it's in a decade of playing pro. I got to open up doors with my resume, and I couldn't go to a factory for that.
And you know what? When you go to schools like Columbia, there's so many people, we just were talking, who, you know, are in these spots, you know, in these big corporate, and they do open doors. What? Oh, you went to Columbia? Oh, yeah. Columbia grad? Yeah. I mean, it just changes things for you once you graduate from a school.
Oh, absolutely,
like that.
Man. You're presumed intelligent. I mean, I don't even have to tell you my GPA. I'm having these casual conversations with people on the airplane, walking down the street. And, you know, we all know how it goes when it comes to perceptions and stereotypes.
Right.
Big black Compton football player. Man, that door is damn near closed.
And when you say where you graduated, where it changes.
Bam. Eyebrows hit the top of their head.
Right, right.
Columbia. And everything else shifts. And then all of a sudden we're having different conversations about more meaningful things. So that's why I had to go to CU.
What did you study? And like, if you hadn't gotten to the NFL, what would you be doing? You know, now you're a broadcaster, obviously, but did you major in communications and want to do this?
Not at Columbia.
No, not at all, right? I was going to be a school teacher at most, a dean. I love the fork in the road kid. Still to this day, in part why I wrote the book of inspiration is for that kid, because I was one of those kids. I was one of those kids that had the gunshots go right by me. I was one of those kids that had the families in the gang and all that stuff was hitting me at home. I was one of those kids that it could have went right or it could have went wrong.
Right.
And I want to always grab that kid and say, do the right things, play the long game, persevere through this. And more importantly, never shut up. Like the title of my book, Your Essence. My world kept telling me who I was. And I was like, nah, I'm something else. And I was around people who had low ambition. We all know about the drugs, the gangs, the poverty in Compton and South Central, but no one talks about the low ambition. People not living out their fullest desires. They're going to jobs, not careers, and their spirit is getting dimmer by the day. That's why cats be living on the edge when I grew up. Like, I'd just be in a grocery store, somebody snap. And I'm like, why is everybody on this emotional edge? It's because they're not living their fulfilled life. So I just had to get out of that.
Do you remember, was it Hollywood Shuffle was the movie? Do you remember that movie?
Mm-hmm.
And the grandmother, the whole way, they were trying to be movie producers, right?
Yeah.
And the grandmother, she kept saying the same thing over and over. You know there's work at the post office.
At the post office, yeah.
That? And that
in.
Was the whole line, but that's how a lot of people think.
Bruh.
Like, what are you talking about? You're trying to be a movie producer. You better go down to the post office and get a job, and then you live these miserable lives. And I'm not knocking anybody as a postman.
No.
But you know what I'm saying.
No, I know
Because you
what
don't dream first. You don't go out. I always used to say there's always work at the post office. The other way around, you go and dream big.
And if you can't,
make that thing, there's always that other job.
You know why? It's crazy that you said that. Okay, so I grew up, and everybody in my family, I'm not talking about my mother and father, everyone, light company, you know, just utility jobs. Guess what my mother worked?
Well,
post office.
Is that right?
Guess where my dad worked?
Well,
post office.
Wow.
See what I'm saying? So when you say that, I know what I mean. No,
like,
and I take it the right way. I was a youngster who realized that my mom and dad never dreamed of the reality that they're living. And that's okay. But it's time for me to start dreaming.
Right.
And I put all this on my back. And like I said, I had to be responsible with my choices.
Do you know, I grew up in the Midwest. And all I knew about Compton was what I heard from NWA, right? Wow. So I had this view of Compton.
What does that stand for? Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. Especially on this show.
Right.
Not right now. And I'm here. Don't you dare say that.
You know, I had this view of what Compton was like. And then over the course of my life, I know probably 8 people from Compton, not even including you, that I know personally that are all doing well.
Mm.
Like journalists, mm-hmm. photographers, doctors. I know, like you mentioned some of it, gunshots going by you and stuff, but does Compton get somewhat of a bad rap? Is it as bad as people perceive, you know, outside of Compton or outside of California maybe? Or are there kind of 2 Comptons? Or, you know, tell me about it.
Yeah, all right. So first, it depends on when you were born and when you were raised in Compton. So I'm pre-NWA. I'm born in 1974. So when I'm going through my rearing years, it's the 80s, early 80s, given NWA the material that they're going to write about in the late 80s, right? So gang violence, the drugs, all the poverty wasn't glamorized. It wasn't storybook. It was just, whoa, this is the reality and it's hell. So Crips and Bloods were really Crips and Bloods. I'm talking about borders. Like, if you cross that street, you literally thought, I may get killed. If I wear this Jordan sweatsuit, I literally are going to get jacked at minimum or get killed. I didn't wear red ever because I was like, I am not getting smoked over some hat. And it's craziness. So then NWA hits.
Right.
And all of a sudden, now you're like, people think it's cool. Some people think it's fashionable. Some people think it's, this is like intimate reporting. And I'm like, no, that was reality. And it shifted. It got harder in some respects, and it got easier in some respects because now the fakers who thought it was cool kind of diluted it. And it was all right for me because it made it more peaceful, it felt like. But the point of it is, growing up in Compton, the best way I could say it is you're in a race and there is some monster behind you called just issues, drugs, gangs, poverty, whatever it is, and it's going to eat those who can't outrun it. But those who do survive that race and outrun it, oh, man, we ready for the world.
Well, yep,
you're already good.
Yep.
Man, it's just an inspiring story when you just talk about it because a lot of people – grew up that same way, and you could take a path. You know, there's a path that you could either go that way, and it's very easy. Most people give in because giving in is the easiest route, right?
No, yeah.
You don't expect anything from me. My parents didn't do anything. You know what I mean? You can make all the excuses in the world. My brother didn't turn out, so I should fall in that same pattern. And a lot of people aren't willing to fight, and you got to fight for really what you want and your beliefs. Did you ever think like that? Like this is what I want. I don't care what came before me. I don't care what other people are doing. This is what I want.
Yeah, I had a grandmother who raised me in the church. And regardless of your religious beliefs, if you have them or not, one thing that really stuck with me is something she used to always read in the Bible to me. And she was like, the gates to heaven are narrow and few come between. And when I heard that, I was thinking more in my life circumstances. Mm-hmm. That means most things, people are going to be sheep and they're going to fail in terms of could they live out a greater being, greater existence. So I started to realize that when I felt lonely, maybe I was on the right path, especially in those circumstances and in that environment. So when I start thinking about success, as they say, it's always crowded at the bottom of the ladder because everybody's trying to come up, right?
Right.
But when you get to the top, like a pyramid, ain't that much room at the top of the pyramid, right? So I started to climb and realize people were falling off and people were just not doing the same things in effort and achievement. And that actually was encouraging to me because I'm like, I'm going in rarefied air if I'm the only brother here, if I'm the only athlete here. So I just kept using that as my fuel.
The other thing I was going to say, even growing up in your neighborhood, now this happened to me when I was growing up, and I grew up in a middle class neighborhood. We had our own home and all that. It wasn't Jamaica, Queens. It was nice.
Right.
Okay, I hope so.
And you know, I'm going to cut you off because I got tired. I got to Columbia around brothers and others, And it's weird. When you're from the hood, it's almost like stick your chest out. I survived.
Right.
But I was like, you stick your chest out. Your mom and dad prepared for you and gave you something. Yep. People always clown someone you born on third base.
Trust me.
My son right now, born on third base.
Right.
And I'd be damned if he's mad at that. You right. better go score,
right,
bro.
Right on the money.
No,
man,
no.
That's
everybody the goal. Trying to get there.
That's right. The goal.
And I was going to say, the thing that I always admired about some of my friends was they knew early on that I wanted to have this career. I always wanted to be a sports writer from 9 years old and all this stuff.
Right.
And they used to go out, and I just wonder if this happened to you, where they would be going out and maybe getting into some stuff that they shouldn't be getting into. They would not let me go. Mm. They would go like, these were real friends. They would go like, we're going here, and Rob, you're not coming.
Yeah.
Did you have friends like that who looked out and tried not to get you, knowing that maybe you had a future and they didn't want to mess it up?
Yeah, man, I was blessed to have like layers of that. So I had the friends who were like, you ain't about this life, Wiley, and you know what? You seem like you're going to make it out of this, so go ahead and do that. But then I also had another level of protection, which is my uncles. Now, no one raises their hands to be born into some gangsta-ass family, right?
Right.
I didn't
right.
say I wanted thug uncles, but I had them, you know? And two of them got murdered. One of them committed suicide just on some real gang life activity. Yeah. And I was growing up just thinking that's my uncle. And then you look back at pictures, you look back at moments, and you're like, oh, he was really just
so
thorough.
You didn't know at that time they were how deep they
not
were
not at all, man. I look back at pictures, like, oh, he wore blue and everything.
Right.
He got curling rolls and stuff like
all this stuff, right.
Gangstered out. But I didn't know then. It was just my Uncle Tyrone. So then if that didn't work, which usually that was it, my sister, who was 2 years older than me, always a grade ahead of me, always ready to throw them hands, throw them things, warned everybody, don't you ever touch my brother, because I was her little teddy bear.
Right.
And she was the enforcer everywhere I went. So it wasn't just my name in terms of my family alliances. It wasn't just because I had that potential. My sister had, my sister sent dudes to the hospital in elementary school. And I told her not to do it, but she would just tear a dude, bite him, anything to mess with her brother. Like, so I always had protection.
There you go.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific.
Now, we want to get into, obviously, some football and some basketball, which you're a big Clippers fan.
You know it.
But football, right now, I want to ask you this about the Oakland Raiders.
Hmm.
There was a story today in The Athletic about players, seven veteran players were quoted, most anonymously, but one, Lee Smith, was actually on the record. But they're concerned, like, basically it looks like John Gruden's lost the locker room.
Right.
And guys are concerned, like, Lee Smith's concerned that guys are going to just, you know, give up on the season. You still got 11 or 10 games left.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What is it like? What do you think it's like for these guys to be in a locker room where the coach is appears to be all about the future and getting draft picks? Anybody could be traded at any moment.
He's not held
and
to
this
the same.
Season, and you're not going to win. Like, you know, you're basically out of the playoffs already, it seems like. What is it like when you got such a long way to go in such a grueling sport when you're in that situation?
Yeah, so defeating. You got to think about what's happening and the impact it has on the locker room. The oldest locker room in the NFL as well, because that's veteran laden. So when you talk about a veteran locker room, typically you think about win now.
Right.
But this is just the opposite. They're talking about, hey, we're going to demo this team and then rebuild it once we get to Vegas, clean slate. So here's the thing that's going on. If you're a veteran on this team, you feel like there's a glass ceiling in terms of your power. You feel like your flex. You can't go there because everyone's expendable, including you good players. John Gruden walked in there and said, what's the top? Give me the list of the top five players we got on our squad. And he said, okay, let me get rid of at least three of them dudes, right? Marquette King, Khalil Mack, and now we see Amari Cooper. So
right.
Derek Carr got to be shaking in his boots every time he hears criticism. And then look at the youngsters on his team who you think, oh, they feel good because you know what? This team is old, and he's getting rid of all these older veterans. No, no, no. Because if we cut the big dogs, guess what you little pups are? Way more expendable than them. You haven't proven a damn thing in this league. So you look at this situation, it's kind of damning all around.
You don't agree with what he's doing?
No, not at all. There's never been a situation in the NFL, I think, that's just turnkey. every coach got to come in there and do what? Coach.
Right.
You got to go get something out of a player. You got to manage certain situations and personalities. You got to do your job. He walked in here and saw a roster that won 12 games just 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And look, they underachieved last year, and obviously a little hangover effect from no Derek Carr in the playoffs the year before. But to demo this team, you should have been able to work with what you got and still be competitive.
And don't you think part of it, too, is some of the players have an issue with him not being held accountable? When you give a coach a 10-year, $100 million contract, he's untouchable. Nobody should ever – everybody should have to, you know, play or work – to keep their spot. Do you know what I mean? And I think that that's come back to bite them. They thought it was great. Oh, we got to lock him up. And I get it. He gave up a TV job and all this. But I think that contract has actually hurt the Raiders.
Yeah, you think about it, man. Our calendars are not in sync. You got 10 years and guarantees. And I got the next play and no guarantees.
Right, right. That's what I'm saying. We're not in the same boat.
We're not pulling in the same direction, coach. No. And look, most coaches understand in the NFL today, you're expendable as well. Mid-season, early season, hey, we lose a few games. The owner's tapping at you and he gives you that kiss of death. Oh, his job is safe. You know what that means. Right. The next week, we're going to fire him.
Right.
So every other coach, 30 other coaches, because Belichick, like, you ain't firing me tomorrow, but, you know, but everybody else is dealing with a different situation, and the fire is held to their feet. But you look at this situation, 10 years, but I think what no one is talking about is this is coming from upstairs. A cash-poor team like the Raiders is saying, clean house, get us under this cap. Well, they have 32 players next year under $2 million in salary cap.
Yep.
What the hell does that whisper to you or yell to you that we ain't trying to win right now?
Right.
It's all about Vegas. Yep. Rob and I have talked extensively on the show about the piss poor job we feel that the NFL Players Association has done.
Absolutely.
I mean, if any athletes, basketball, baseball, football, deserve guaranteed contracts, I think it's the NFL athletes.
And Marcellus, even if it's just a 3-year, a real contract, they give out a lot of phony contracts. Hey, you got an 8-year deal, but it's only the guaranteed money is really your only, right? Because most of the time they let you go and you never collect that money.
Yeah, that's the only thing.
I would disagree that they're doing a poor job. I would say this. You got to think about any negotiation you're in your quiet moments, quiet hours, think about the other side of the table because they got to win too, or it's not really a true negotiation. Somebody just got beat up. And the owners are sitting there saying, you guys are walking liabilities, human risk factors that no one's trying to insure, let alone me trying to insure. So it's not about motivation. It's about you're going to get hurt and you're going to miss games. And I don't give a damn who you are. It's going to happen. So I think they've done a great job of closing that gap between NBA and Major League Baseball by doing this. You get a Kirk Cousins. Okay, you could get a 5-year, $120 million monopoly contract, or you could get 3 years, 84, fully guaranteed.
No, that's the contract I'm talking about.
So I think that's happening much
more. Do you think, because we've talked about how we feel like we've talked about Le'Veon Bell. And we disagreed on him holding out or whatever you want to
I think that's all
it.
He has to do. But, I mean, not a holdout because he didn't have a contract signed,
but
technically.
He's essentially, because you know, he's going to have to sign it in a few weeks. But the point is, I've said, look, they got to change the CBA. And the only way they probably can do that when it's up in 2020 is to strike. Is that realistic? Because football players, you only got a short window. You probably want to get that money. Is it real? Talk to us as a football player.
Oh, yeah.
Is it realistic that dudes will sit out, maybe give up a season to get guaranteed deals, maybe for other people down the road versus themselves?
Hell no.
Okay.
Y'all haven't read my book fully yet, but we just talked about what I came through. And you think I'm going to get there and they got that money in front of me and I'm going to say, nah, you know what? Let me just stay poor a little bit longer.
But this is the only difference, though. And I hear you. I hear you. But all you have to do is look at the way Major League Baseball takes care of its players. It's through giving. You got to give to get. And until people, NFL players, understand that, and it can't always be about you, I always tell people all the time, when you retire, you know how many games you have to play in the major leagues to be eligible for a pension? one day on a major league roster. You don't have to play no 8-10 years to be eligible.
Yeah.
Same thing. You get a pension. You get lifetime health care. Those are things worth fighting for. And you just saw with the Hall of Famers talking about that they don't get health care and all these guys are hurting and whatnot. And then you have a league that's going around bragging about how much money it makes. Your union, and I say you, I know you're not in it anymore.
I was a player rep for 9 to 10 years, so I'm part of it.
But your union also made an agreement about the CTE where the NFL is going to, you know, they came to an agreement with the league.
The concussion lawsuit.
And the judge, not in the history of legal judges who have these agreements, said, oh, no, even though both sides agreed to it, said, I will not sign this because it's too low. You never see that. A judge, usually if two sides come to an agreement, a judge is just going to rubber stamp it. He looked at the money and was like, how could the union agree to this?
Right. Okay.
It's not enough.
So give us your side, because that's kind of how we feel.
Yeah. Well, one, baseball and football is not analogous. We're talking about guaranteed contracts and then talking about how come you guys don't fight the same when one has a guaranteed climate and one doesn't. So in a guaranteed climate, if I sign for 6 years, let's just say $80 million in baseball, I'm getting my 6 years, $80 million, and I know that. So I come in with a different armor. I come in with different weapons versus a football player where the median salary, the average salary, everything's lower. But here's the real example of why football is in a different position. Baseball's heritage and their union,
best union in the country.
Well, yeah, and also the oldest. Like let's just all, when we're talking generational wealth, the beauty of generational wealth is the accumulation of interest. So all of a sudden, third generation Johnny at Columbia is not going to act the same as first generation Marcellus. Right. And the NFL is almost first generation Marcellus, where it's like you're asking me to do things that in my sacrifice, I don't even have anything in my nest egg to even talk about sacrificing. So it's a blind conversation to a football union, and they're fighting. What goes underreported is the health benefits and the $1 billion that they added to it in 2011. Not many people walking around the street is hearing that. All we're hearing is everyone's broke down and crippled and no one's helping them. I think the union is doing a good job, not a perfect job. But if you're going to ask, and we're going to base this union based on, are you getting guaranteed contracts for the players? If you're not happy with a Kirk Cousins contract and more improvements on that, you're never going to see a fully guaranteed contract in our sport.
But I'll say this too, and oftentimes, the only reason that you have free agency in this country is Kurt Flood with the St. Louis Cardinals gave up his career.
Right.
He went to court, you know what I mean? It cost him. But that's the only way you get things changed, and sometimes you
but that's
one that's guy, one but I'm guy just but I'm saying
versus getting all these football
players together. You can't tell me that if you really are together and you're right with the baseball players, they have a war chest.
Yes.
They have money ready.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is what has to happen. You have to save enough money up so that when that moment comes, and then here comes Marcellus who has to pay his mortgage and they don't have any money, the union pays. That's what happens in baseball. When they walk out, they pay your bills.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know you're going to get
a different animal. Right. Brother.
I wish, because I agree with what Rob is saying, and I wish the players would be able to get this.
Have a war chest to be able to do, right, to get what
but
they deserve.
I think.
That's idealistic, though.
Right. I don't see it happening.
I used to be in a player rep meetings in Hawaii. And at the time, I think we were saying our war chest was like $300 million. Like, that was just set aside for legal fees if necessary, right?
Right.
There are 32 owners. And let's just say average net worth is $2 billion. That's $64 billion. And if they want to set aside just 10%, that's $6.4 billion.
Right.
And you go into court, and you know what? Before there's innocence and guilt is wealth. It's the rich man wins, right? You go into court with somebody with sick, he will lawyer you to death. That's a futile fight. I think they're doing a tremendous job of closing the gap. I grew up in a world where my dad was talking about if you big and you fast and you're strong, be the heavyweight champion of the world. Be Muhammad Ali in the 70s, right? Then that transition to, you know what? Be in the NBA because that's where you want to be. And it's still the NBA. But now football is closing the gap. Like, we see Aaron Rodgers signed for $170 million, y'all. Like, let's just be 100 with this. Like, football is now in a place where you're like, you make some good money in football.
That's only a few players. And in the NBA, you got
Wait a minute. Let's look at the Lakers roster right now, because I used to do this in the media because I used to laugh. I'd be like, yo, You make media cast is making more than half the Lakers. Like, yeah, we got LeBron, we got Alonzo, but then you start looking at the bottom of that roster, cast in there making hundreds of thousands of dollars, and it ain't LeBron money. LeBron makes more in a game than some of those cats make in
a year.
Well,
the minimum in the NBA is about $500,000.
Right, yeah. And it's a lot of cats.
But you got a guy, an average guy like a Tim Hardaway, I mean, better than average, Tim Hardaway Jr., guaranteed – $71, $72 million.
Oh, now we're having a different conversation.
And you know, you don't get – so
no one raises their hand to be a football player first.
Right.
Someone puts your hand down and say, you're not playing basketball. I'm telling you, like in high school, everybody want to play basketball.
I agree with that.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
All right, Marcellus Wiley joining the iCouple in studio. Marcellus, obviously an all-pro former NFL player. Talk to us about how, you know, a lot of former players have criticized the rules changes and they're not letting you hit and this and that. And I'm with those players. I think that it's a dangerous sport. Let's accept it. Try to make it safe as you can, but understand it's going to be dangerous no matter what we do unless you make it flag football. Where do you stand on?
Man, you and them old players is just wrong, man. Y'all sound,
what you going to do?
Y'all sound like hip-hop is dead now. I can't stand these youngsters.
Well, it is.
You know what? And you know what's funny?
You know, I know you ain't into mumble rap either.
I am. You know why? Because we had mumble rap in the 80s and 90s. JJ Fad, tell me what they said at the end of that song. I'm summer, number, 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 number. Yeah.
But that was it.
That's what they said at the end.
I knew what they were talking about.
Okay, come on. DOS mumble. Effects.
Super excited.
DOS Effects, go. Bumps, giggity, bumps, giggity, bucka. Okay, I'll wait.
But that was one group. You know what I'm saying?
I named two now, but do you want me to keep going?
No.
Because we have Fushnickens.
Man, come on.
But here's the thing.
Hip-hop.
Look, we always hold on to our era. That's who we are as human beings. We only remember highlights of our era.
I give you that.
We don't remember the lowlights. We don't remember the average. We only remember the top. And it's funny, now every player is coming out, man, the league's so soft. The league's so soft. Here's the thing. Here's what the league has realized. Our business model has to reflect our audience. What is our audience? Fantasy football players and people who just want to come in here and see high-scoring offenses and points. Super Bowl, 41-33. Despite a top four defense in Philadelphia winning it, they gave up 33 points. So here's the NFL now. Let's protect our investment. Quarterbacks, first, foremost. And I respect that.
You cool? Because T.O. was in here yesterday. He said, I'd be upset if I was in the league if I'm another position because they want to protect the quarterbacks, but what about the rest of us?
Look, it's been the evolution of football from day one. Look, if this NFL is soft, what do you call the NFL that came right after they were smoking cigarettes and head slapping? Because you know what them old dudes were saying? Oh, y'all soft. Y'all can't take the head slap. So then it moved to you can't cut block. And then it moved to, you know what, on special teams, no more wedge blocking. No more two-on-ones. Like, and now we're at you can't touch them at the 5 yards and you can't slam the quarterback. Sack the quarterback like he's your son. That's fine with me. You know why? Because if I DDT you, destroy you, land you on your neck, or if I just lay you on the blanket, guess what I get? One sack. Guess what we get? The yardage that's behind the line of scrimmage. The messaging in football, Steve Atwater, Ronnie Lott, my finger fell off, but I'm still balling. Look, that's not for the civilized. Here's the audience of the NFL also. It's second-generation athletes like me who are sitting there like Drew Brees and his kids. Hey, man, y'all better clean that thing up or I don't need my kids out there. Why? Because they don't need to be. Football is going to go where boxing went. One. And two, soccer moms. Soccer moms sitting there saying, CTE, what?
We're not having it.
We're not having
it.
So if you don't clean that thing up, guess what you're going to lose? The next generation.
But some of the helmet-to-helmet hits, this was my problem, and they not calling it like they were before.
Let's make sure we get the basketball in. We don't have a lot of time.
Right.
So but quick.
Yeah, I don't want to –
Let's not do that.
Yeah, just quick.
I was just saying some of the helmet-to-helmet hits I thought were
a little bit – They're not always calling
it correctly. Okay, that's all I'm saying.
Let's get on Chris Paul. Give us the Chris Paul. You got the take. People are bashing him now because of – the fight and what went on, and now everybody's saying he's not a good teammate, he's a bad guy.
All these wolf tickets all these chumps out there. And those are all my homeboys that are chumping, too. Big Baby Davis, my neighbor. What's up, boy? I know.
You saw what he tweeted.
Ryan Hollins, my dog.
He's very bad, too.
My boy.
Right, right. Yep.
Stop it.
They both went at him.
You know what it is? Chris Paul's a barker. You know who else is a barker? Kobe Bryant.
But Kobe won championship.
Ah! So I'm in practice. I'm at the baseline. You barking. It's time for me to bark back. Oh, wait a minute. That's a five-time champion barking at me. Let me swallow my pride. But then when I hear you, Chris Paul, doing the same exact thing, you know why I don't receive it the same way? Because it ain't worked for you fully, bruh. So if it ain't worked for you fully, why are you over there imitating somebody who has done that? If you're not a Don Dada with hardware, we know you get graded differently. I'm a broadcaster that I'm going to say the same thing, whether it's me, 10-year player, all pro, no Super Bowl championships, or if I were drafted to New England instead of Buffalo, I would have won two championships before free agency. All of a sudden, it means something different. It impacts different. That's a Super Bowl champion saying what Marcellus said. Completely different complexion.
Marcellus, did LeBron James come here to win championships or to be the next Meryl Streep? Which one?
Both. And ain't nothing wrong with that. That's what the Lakers are. Lakers have never been just singular and focused.
I keep telling Showtime about Shaq 2.0. Being in Kazam.
Shaq in that movie, stop
it. No, and rapping and all that, cutting albums,
hold on. It's bigger than Nino Brown. Stop blaming the players. The owner of the Lakers, Dr. Jerry Buss, the PhD physicist, came to the organization and said, we bring in Showtime. You know what that means? Win on the court, win off the court. Forum Club opens. Actors, celebrities, sidelines. Cheerleaders, first time in the NBA. More importantly, watch my entourage. And if y'all know Dr. Buss, y'all know what that entourage looked like. It looked like, hey, we got more going on than just basketball.
All right, but he got a win on the court. What? Marcellus, great time, man. We
watch
we
his
love
show on FS1.
Check out Speak for Yourself on Fox Sports 1.
And buy the
go
book.
Go buy the book. Never shut up. It's in bookstores now. Marcellus Wiley, The I Couple, Fox Sports Radio. Make sure you go and pick this up, man. Great job.
Yes.
Thanks a lot.
Appreciate
Thank you,
brother.
So much.
Man, love.